We be live. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We are live. So we are here with Dr. Faisal and Irfan. Irfan, do you want to take over and tell us what we're doing here? Go on.
Yes.
Go on.
Go on, Irfan.
Thanks, Armin.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. And welcome to a discussion. On the existence of non-existence of God. Our discussion partners today are Dr. Mir Faisal and Armin Nawabi.
All right, do you want me to do the intro? Oh, go on.
Yes. Okay. Dr. Mir Faisal is a physicist. Dr. Mir Faisal is a physicist and director of Canadian Quantum Research Center and the adjunct faculty at the Columbia University of British Columbia. He received his PhD in quantum gravity from the University of York and then did his postdocs from University of Durham and University of Oxford. He has published 174 articles in peer-reviewed journals in Nature.
All right, Irfan, your audio You have audio problems, so maybe the doctor should introduce himself because I think your audio is not very good. So, Dr. Faisal, do you want to introduce yourself?
Give more than enough introduction to me, and it's kind of embarrassing introducing myself. So let's just come to the topic, you know. And people know Armin, people can Google me.
Just Google us. Let's just get to the topic.
Google me, guys, if you want to know who I am.
Yes.
And Google Armin if you want to know like who he is.
Yes, I like that policy. Exactly. So, doctor, hi. Thank you for being here. You are a Muslim quantum scientist. Is that a correct description of you?
If you want to linguistically approximate my beliefs, I would say yes. Peacemaking, submitted to truth would be a good linguistic approximation. Depends on how you define a Muslim. But quantum physicist, I'm a quantum person who works on quantum gravity, which includes both general relativity and quantum mechanics. And I have worked on foundations of quantum mechanics. So that would again be a good approximation to what I am.
Okay, great. So, go on, tell us why there's a God.
Well, let's first, I liked your book, by the way. And by the way, before I go on to the subject, let me speak one or two good words about you.
Oh, you like my
I
book.
Liked your sincerity, the fact that I heard your story and the fact that you tried to even commit suicide by taking metaphysical ideas so seriously, which was very interesting. But let's go on to this. One thing I really liked in your book was when you discussed the idea that the word God is ambiguous. So even when we are saying why there is a God, I don't know what I'm talking about, because you see the very question, is there a God, has two sub-questions to it. How do you define God, and does that God exist? And usually people choose a definition, then go on to argue for the existence, get troubles with that, go back, make a loop, modify the definition, and it's an infinitum. We won't come to any conclusion like that. Maybe choose a definition. I'll do the reverse strategy. I will fix a definition for existence that Armin, both you and me can agree on, and I think we can, and then try to come to the definition of that existence. So I'll reverse the strategy. I will use the hierarchy of natural phenomena. I think you would agree that there is a hierarchy of natural phenomena. Take a rod, bend it. Bends.
Wait. Can we define God first? Do you want to define God first or no?
I'm using the hierarchy of natural phenomena to define God. So this comes because of atomic physics, which in turn comes from particle physics. So you see a hierarchy of natural phenomena. I would define, now this is my definition of God. I would define God as the most fundamental aspect of reality from which every other aspect of reality emerges, and it does not emerge from anything yet more fundamental, because if it does, then that is God. Now, this definition of God, by the way, is a tautology, and it is even consistent with atheism, because I guess most atheists, most atheists.
We don't need to debate that then, because if you want to define God that way.
We need to come to Exactly. We don't need to debate this definition because I have given you no new information. Yeah. But what I have done.
Yeah, because that God exists. Ambiguous...
If... Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm really glad you said that because now what we have done, we have transformed. We have transformed an ambiguous question, does God exist, to a non-ambiguous question, what is the most fundamental form of reality? You see my point? I am happy to argue with you. But I don't have an argument.
You just named. But we don't even need to argue that because you just named.
So what we have done is because. Exactly.
Because here's the point. Okay.
Whatever. That is the point. We have converted an ambiguous question neither you nor I know what I'm talking about. Does God exist? What do you even mean by God? To a more unambiguous question, what is the most fundamental form of reality? And I can go through.
But that's not what people mean by God. But that's not what people mean by God.
You have defined God in a way.
Doctor, can you hear me? You have defined God in a way that you're just labeling something that we kind of know that it probably exists. You have just labeled it God. No. It's kind of like me calling. It's okay. You know. So yeah, that. You know but that's not what people mean by God. Yes.
Okay. Wait a second. Wait a second. It's very interesting. Let me make this point. So what I have done is something very interesting, Armin. See, I look at it as a problem in logic. So what I have done is, what is a common denominator between theists and atheists and any philosophy? Leaving absurdists aside, I would say that all of us agree that there is a most fundamental aspect of reality. Now, a materialist would say it is matter moving in space and time. You would agree with that. I don't even care whether you call it God or call it no God or call it X, call it Y, call it Z. I'm interested in the nature of this most fundamental aspect of reality. And as I will argue through, and you can follow me and tell me if my argument is wrong at any stage, please do correct me if you're not convinced at any point. I think I can demonstrably show that it can't be matter, it can't be quantum fields in space and time, it can't even be information. Because of Gödelian limitation, it has to be pure consciousness. And by pure consciousness, I do not mean human consciousness. I mean something that a non-algorithmicity, through which you overcome Gödelian limitations. So, which is basically the God of Wahdatul Wajud, God of Advaita Vedanta, God of
all. You're saying it's the laws of the, so, you're talking, you're so, calling the God, laws of the universe. Just, doctor, you're calling the laws of the universe consciousness. No, I'm not.
That is the whole point.
Okay, what are you calling consciousness?
Let's go slow here. Okay. I'll come to that. But first of all, can we agree on one thing? Can we transform, so that even here atheists and theists can agree that let's throw this question of does God exist away because it's really ambiguous, and let's talk about what is the most fundamental nature of reality.
It doesn't matter, whatever the most fundamental, I don't know how you're going to measure most fundamental, but whatever measurement
you... What if I can actually prove to you, and you can find faults in my proof, and I will be happy to go through those faults, that the most fundamental aspect of reality is something called pure consciousness, a sort of self-awareness generating the laws of physics, which in turn generates... So the bit information generates substance, and this bit comes from in consciousness, cannot be self-sustained, cannot contain its own consistency.
You're calling information, not information. Okay, what is it then? What is this thing that you're calling consciousness?
Yeah, that is a good question. What is it? So let me make my point, and then you will understand what it is, because this is not a conventional argument. So we have agreed to one thing. I think we have some amount of agreement. We have agreed that we will leave the more ambiguous question, does God exist, to a more well-defined question, what is the most fundamental aspect of reality? Agreed?
Oh my God.
That's a more interesting question.
Can you tell me what consciousness, what do you mean by consciousness here?
Yes, I can definitely tell you that. And that's why I wanted to go with the presentation so my argument becomes clear. But Let's put it like this. What is consciousness? But do you want to go to consciousness or do you want to gradually build the argument? It's up to you. If you want to directly jump to the consciousness.
You don't need to prove. I'm just going to accept.
A lot of background noise. You're getting a lot of background noise. What is the source?
I can't hear any background noise. I'm fine.
Yeah, we're not. We're fine. We're already interrupting each other so much.
Let me summarize my argument. Yeah, maybe in two minutes. So that at least you know what I'm really stating. For me, I started with a definition of God that both you and me and atheists and atheists can agree on, that there is a fundamental aspect of reality from which everything else emerges. If you were just considering Newtonian mechanics, special or general relativity, it's just matter particles moving in space and time. That's it. That's all that is to reality. Quantum mechanics slightly changes it. It just basically in quantum mechanics, you have weird phenomena like future particles in past correlate, change their behavior to correlate with what is happening in future, but it's still material particles moving in space and time. By the time you come to quantum field theory in curved space time or quantum field theory in general, material particles stop being real, really real, because you can have a box. And I can see material particles in it, if I'm accelerating with respect to you, and you will see no material particles in it. It is because
I'm just going to assume you're right that these are not the fundamental parts of the universe. Just tell us which one it is. You're right. None of these are. Just tell us what it is.
Physically, where we stand in quantum. Yes, sir. Okay, so where we stand in quantum gravity is this, right now. Let me come to this. That the laws of physics, abstract information, generates the substance of the universe, generates space and time, generates the substance. This view is called it from bit, not bit from it. It means the substance. So it comes from bit, an abstract Neoplatonic view where the laws of physics are more fundamental than the physics of multiverse or the universe. Now, if you accept that view, what are laws of physics? Let's come to this, Armin. What are laws of physics? You would agree that they are a set of rules, a mathematical structure, right? And all consequences of that are getting actualized, right?
Okay.
That is what that's what information theory is. It's a set of rules. Rules 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, set of axiomatic rules actualized, and a consequence of those rules being ultimately true is that our universe is true. But now we come to the killer. Yes. The killer is the Gödel's theorem. Gödel's theorem states that given any mathematically axiomatic structure, it cannot contain its own consistency and it cannot contain its own completeness. There will be things which will be outside this structure, which will be true because of the very construction of the structure. But you cannot prove it through an algorithmic process. And this has led to a very nice definition of consciousness, which is by Lucas and Penrose, and basically it even goes back to Gödel. Basically, the idea is that human consciousness, now we're talking specifically of human consciousness. Human consciousness does not work mathematically. It doesn't work algorithmically. You just know things, and you can verify Gödelian statements.
Doctor, what is the most fundamental? You said you wanted to get us, you kept on telling us the things that are not the fundamental part of the universe. What is? Can you just tell us what it is?
I'll just tell you, you won't get much about it, but I'll tell you what. If I use this Penrose-Lucas theory, Penrose-Lucas argument to know that consciousness works in a non-algorithmic way, and that is needed to prove, pure consciousness. Huh? Pure consciousness, and by consciousness, I am taking the definition by Penrose-Lucas, non-algorithmicity, overcomes Gödelian limitations. Awareness, a sort of pure consciousness, and that is needed.
That makes no sense.
Inconsistencies.
What do you mean?
That makes Why on earth would it not make sense? How else can you run away from Gödelian paradoxes?
Don't tell me that
you see human consciousness as emergent. Yes, please go on.
Oh my God, it's so hard to talk to you, doctor. Right? Can you explain? Can you explain simply what you mean by pure consciousness? Because I don't think you are explaining it very well. What do you mean by pure consciousness?
Okay, because I didn't.
Are you talking?
I made.
Jokes, are you talking about the base? Do you think that information is consciousness? Can information be consciousness? What do we usually mean, refer to when? Where does the word consciousness come from? The word consciousness comes from. And you're doing a very poor job at it. You're doing a very poor job explaining it.
I know it's a very difficult concept. I mean, you're not the only one who has stated it. People have understood my argument.
So do better. Do better. Do better. What? Do better. Do better. What do you mean by pure consciousness?
Let's try to simplify. Let's try to simplify, Armin. Let's try to simplify. I'll try to simplify. And you're really
okay. You don't need to say, doctor. You just say it. You said. Let's try to simplify it like 10 times. You're repeating yourself. Just explain.
Armin, there is no background noise. Okay, Armin. Let's try to make it as simple.
Okay, Irfan, stop.
If you want a definition, just a second. If you want a definition of consciousness, and now we're not even talking of the most fundamental aspect of reality, and I think we should have broken this thing into many subsections because we are having lots of interesting ideas. So, if
Dr. Faisal, what is pure consciousness? What is pure consciousness?
Well, okay. Do you want to first know what is consciousness in terms of a more scientific definition of consciousness? I've written pre-published papers on it. The word consciousness
comes from a human centric understanding of us humans, right? The word consciousness comes with our human experience of our brains and the way we perceive the world and the way that we observe the information and the way that we process that information. Okay, so if we want to attribute consciousness to anything else other than the human mind, we have to show some similarity between the process of collecting information and processing information that is close to the human experience. That's what it is, because the word consciousness originally started with us trying to describe a very, very human experience. And then when we went in nature to see if we could find something similar. And now how that collection of information and how much that collection of information and that processing of information needs to be close to the human experience for us to be able to call it. Hello, I'm speaking.
Do you hear me speaking? Yes. Sorry. Go on.
So words are just human constructs and it's an agreement between humans, how we define them. Right. So originally, consciousness is something that refers to something that is completely human. And then because humans are so obsessed with humans, we went into nature and tried to see if there's anything that we could find that has similar to our ways of consuming information and processing it. And because we're so obsessed in finding of not being alone and finding things that are similar to our experiences in the universe, we try to attribute consciousness to different things. So now, whether or not we have consciousness anywhere outside of the human brain really depends on how we define consciousness. And the way we define consciousness is completely up to us. We could make it so narrow so that nothing but the human mind is consciousness, or we could come up with other definitions so that other things could also be considered consciousness. But this is completely up to us. This is completely made up. This is an agreement between me and you, right? So again, for me to understand, if you want to somehow attribute the laws of the universe, the basic foundational laws of the universe, if you want to somehow connect that to consciousness, I don't know. I think you know that the definition that you provide is something that a lot of people would not understand unless they read your paper. But for the sake of argument, let's just say that you come up with a definition of consciousness that whatever is the foundational processes or the most fundamental part of the universe, let's say that based on your definition of consciousness, we will be able to call it consciousness. I don't really care. The point is that that consciousness, whatever you call that, it's not the same as the human understanding of consciousness, the human experience of collecting information, because that's what we mean by consciousness, collecting information from our environment, processing it in a certain way that is useful to our well-being. That's what we mean by consciousness. But if you have a different definition, okay, but I don't care, because if you eventually want to get from consciousness to God, the thing is that throughout history, especially through Abrahamic religions, the God has attributes that are very human. So we're talking about a God that gets angry, a God that is self-aware, a God that is aware of us, a God that answers prayers. And because that God is very human and that God is not provable, a lot of people, especially a lot of theist scientists, try to go find some other human attribute, which is consciousness, and then play with the definition so that you could attribute something that is not a human consciousness and label that as human consciousness, and then somehow connect that consciousness to our consciousness. Because again, what religion is trying to do is trying to find something very human, something that with human characteristics in nature, and say that, oh, look, there's a God, there's something with human characteristics that is responsible for everything. And you are trying to do that in a different way. You're trying to say that there's something, I don't know, something foundational parts of the universe is conscious, and we are conscious. Yeah, Armin, so what are you trying to do?
A very clear thing. You see, you can go into the linguistics of any word. You could go into the linguistics of how moon was defined because people thought people look at moon and become crazy. But are you familiar? Just a second. I'm just trying to be very clear here. Are you familiar with the modern research done in the nature of consciousness by Penrose, and the previous works by Lucas? You see, you can go on. I don't care about. I'm not a linguist. I don't care about the definitions.
Human consciousness?
I mean, you were speaking. I didn't speak, and you rightly stopped me. At least let me make my point. Okay, if you are familiar with that discourse, you see, I'm not just speaking in air. That would be very easy. I can come up with commonsensical arguments and I can tell you how common sense is wrong in millions of times. The idea is that consciousness right now, and people do study consciousness, there are in peer-reviewed journals, and there is debates both ways. But for example, there is this debate about human mind. Like, of course, the initial research on the nature of consciousness starts with humans. And let me illustrate with this, because this is some serious work done by the Nobel Prize winner Lloyd Roger Penrose, and there are lots of scientists working on the very nature of consciousness. There are some scientists like Ed Witten who basically have the opinion that we can never understand consciousness. I'm not one of those. I think we can have a scientific understanding to consciousness. And what you just defined as processing of information, that's a tuning machine. The fact that human mind is not a tuning machine is the essence of this Penrose-Lucas theorem, the Penrose-Lucas argument, that human mind or human consciousness does not work algorithmically. Because what you said is very interesting. Look at what you said. Humans gain information, they process information, they come to conclusions. That's what a computer does. But nobody would call a computer as self-conscious. What you've defined is essentially a tuning machine. And there is this debate. Now, this is something very serious. Like, this is something maybe we don't even reach to God, and that's fine. Let's even discuss consciousness. And then, because you're very right, I think what you did is really brilliant. I like your way of breaking things. Because if you do not understand the nature of consciousness, and what do we mean by consciousness? Do we just mean neural activities and neural processing of those activities? Then it would make absolutely no sense to say that there's some kind of giant neural network producing the laws of physics. On the other hand, there is something very concrete here. Are you familiar at least with Penrose-Lucas argument? And of course, it's criticisms.
No. Are you go ahead.
Okay. So let me tell you, this is you're at least familiar with Roger Penrose, right?
No.
The Nobel Prize.
Go ahead.
Roger Penrose, the Nobel Prize winner in physics. Hawking and Penrose used to fight all the time. When I was in Oxford, this is when it hit me, you know, when I was we were having a dinner together after my talk, and Penrose just talked about his theory, and I was stunned by good, that's why, in fact, I think might have learned about Gödel's theorem, but I came to know about this theory very interestingly. See, there the idea of, let's go historically. Historically, people exactly thought the way you thought, that human mind is just a tuning machine. There are, you know, we take in information, we process information, we have outputs. This is called a tuning machine. But the problem...
Doctor, you're repeating yourself and you're not making any points.
Okay, so then the problem is that there was somebody called Kurt Gödel. Kurt Gödel came up with these Gödel's theorems, and this the Gödel's theorem, and you should check this maybe after the debate. It's really interesting stuff. So Kurt Gödel's theorems basically indicated that any, you know, you have any set of rules, there will be certain things which will lie outside that set of rules. And there, the consistencies of those rules will also be one of those things. They shattered Hilbert's idea that the whole mathematics can be axiomatized. A consequence of this is that humans, mathematicians, can verify Gödelian theorems, but we don't know how. And it can't be done through an algorithmic process. There is no way you can feed this information to a computer and the computer will come to a conclusion. That is what we mean by an algorithm. And Penrose's theory and Lucas's theory, and lots of the other people have worked on it, is that human consciousness, now we're specifically talking of human consciousness, works in a way which is non-algorithmic. And that overcomes the Gödelian limitations.
You're repeating yourself and you're making
it. Did you understand the point? Okay, maybe you can repeat it.
Okay. Yeah, here's the thing, doctor. You're talking about understanding how consciousness works, right? But at the end of the day, at the end of the day, human consciousness involves you have a central processor, which is the human brain. Okay, it takes information from outside, and then something happens inside the human brain, and there's a disagreement among scientists about what exactly happens. Okay, we as humans have a certain experience of what consciousness is, and there's a lot of disagreements at how the process is. You're describing the disagreements or the theories regarding the attributes and the explanation of how that process happens, but we don't know. But my understanding is, based on what I've seen, a lot of arguments is we don't have a clear understanding of exactly how that process works. But what we do know is the fact that it does involve our brain. It does involve the brain collecting information from outside world, and it does involve the brain doing something with it. Right? I didn't talk about it being linear or not linear. That is, we do know we don't care. I don't care about that. The part that we care is that it involves the human brain, the way we have a certain experience of it, like me as a human kind of know how it feels like. We know that it involves the brain collecting information. We know it involves the brain processing that information, either linear or algorithmically or whatever. I don't care. That's not the point of the discussion. The point is that the word came from a very human experience. Now, if you want to come up with a definition of what it is, all right, anything else that you want to go out there and look at, like, oh, that's consciousness, this is consciousness, at the end of the day, it's with the base definition, with our first understanding of a consciousness from a very human experience. So if anything has to be called consciousness, it's based on how similar it is to our personal understanding and our first definition of consciousness, which is a human-centric perspective. So you are basically going out in nature and trying to find something that is the foundation of the universe, and trying to come up with, you have a list of check marks, and trying to relate that to something that is very human, you know, and just because, and you're doing that because religions have done that. But that the God that you're trying to make up here is not the God that people worship. It's not the God that Muslims worship. It's not the God that Christians worship. It's not the God that Jews worship. You are just trying to come up with a vague connection between how the laws of the universe and human consciousness, list of check marks you have, make it a very vague connection between these two. It's not at all close. The laws of the universe, like, let me my final sentence. Yeah, this is a failure because the existence of the laws of the universe and whatever process they came about with, which doesn't really matter to this discussion, is not close enough to the process of the human brain collecting information from the outside world and processing it in whatever way that you say scientists disagree on. They are not close enough for you to be able to connect these two together. Go on.
See, Armin, I think I get your point. See, here there's a big flaw here, and I'll tell you this is the problem of taking things by common sense and taking things by analogy and taking it too far. Now I'll tell you the problem here. If you try to reason like that, the existence of my phone in my hand is a human construct, and of course we know things exist at one point at one time. This is a human construct, right? But we base our we start with this base idea, and then in quantum mechanics, things can exist at two points at the same time. Then we develop ideas of superimposition. And I think we might agree here, in any logical analysis, we start with some base assumptions, and the base assumptions are, of course, anthropocentric. Does not mean that our final conclusion is anthropocentric, and that is why you need to go through a rigorous process. You can't rely on common sense. I mean, if you rely on common sense and say, well, yeah, it's like saying, oh, because we observe brain, everyone knows that consciousness scales with the biological complexity. I even wrote a paper on this, if you want, about why consciousness scales with biological complexity. But does that prove that? Is there a no-go theorem which states that consciousness, as defined by Lucas Pandreau's theory, which is the only definition I know where it makes sense, has to always come from complexity? There is no no-go theorem. You cannot work on analogies. You speak, and this is the flaw first, I think, introduced by Richard Dawkins, right? And because he's a biologist, I forgive him for that. And this is a problem. When you base your analogy on biological reasoning so far, You see a phenomena, and you have to know that this phenomena is a limited phenomena. Yes, what is the hyperstructure in this phenomena we can import? Can we properly analyze it, and how we generalize it? You can't come up and say because consciousness scales with biological complexity, therefore there is some kind of a mathematical no-go theorem that consciousness equals biological complexity. That's just nonsensical. On the other hand, we have a well-defined definition of consciousness, which is the ability to overcome Gödelian limitations. Now, if you take that definition, I cannot see why that definition has to come from complexity. And we're not even talking of biological complexity. It could be complexity in terms of some entangled photons. I don't care. The way you say I don't care, I like that. So I don't really care what that is. It need not come from complexity. It can be the first principle. And that is really important. But before that, I think, the problem is that these things have been studied, and these you can't go into what we mean by something. I think that is very clear, right? For example, what the word electron could have come from XYZ. I don't care. When I talk about electron, I mean a particle that goes around.
Doctor,
the nucleus.
You're not saying anything.
It's well-defined properties, and doctor, now it's a very well-defined concept. Yes, please go on.
Okay, doctor, consciousness. Okay, as we first understood it. It's only biology, okay? It doesn't belong in your field. You're a quantum scientist, okay? Consciousness belongs to the field of biology, okay? I understand that as a human, you feel very alone in the universe, and you're trying to steal a biological concept and bring it into a field of science that it doesn't belong in, and you're just trying to use vague definition of words and bring biological concepts into quantum physics. Okay, this is a desperate attempt for humans to not to feel alone in this vast, vast universe, to try to feel like there's something so foundational within the beginnings of the universe that is very human, that is human-like, okay? But again, this is just playing with words. I understand because of your access to very advanced scientific vocabulary, you could do this more than most people. You could play with words and definitions to bring this very human, very biological concept, try to bring it and somehow connect it with using advanced, very big words and scientific words, try to confuse people and try to bring the consciousness to the laws of physics. But again, you are completely free to do that because, again, unlike physics, unlike biology, the meaning of words are, completely made up. They're completely based on our agreements. And if you want to come up with a new agreement, with an agreement of the definition of word consciousness that basically covers the human mind and something related to the laws of the universe, then that's completely up to you. But again, you cannot say that this is reality when we are talking about the definition of words. You know, I might not accept your definition. You being a scientist, does it? Yeah, go on.
I just loved what you said. Because, if we want to, this is where we are more free as physicists, that we actually are very bad at inventing words than maybe a biologist would. I don't care, like you say. You want to call this, you don't want to use the word God, fine. You don't even want to use consciousness because you want to remit consciousness to something of human mind. I don't care. Let's call it X. So I'm making it even more simple so we can have some, intersubjective agreement here. Again, agree that words take meaning by intersubjective agreement, but words also take meaning by intersubjective agreement within a field. And consciousness, the way this idea of awareness has been well studied. There's a whole journal of consciousness. You should look into it. It's a well-studied branch, and there is a hard problem of consciousness, which you should also look into. And definitely, you should look into Penrose-Lucas argument. Yes. But let's call it X if you're uncomfortable with consciousness. My main assertion is this: this X is something which is non-algorithmic, and I'll tell you what does it even mean to me. And this X is at the foundations of reality. That is it. Now, what is this X? I can explain this X in a very
Here's the thing. I will just give it to you. Your X exists. Okay. Your X exists. Okay, there you go.
We have nothing to debate except language. Alas, then we have nothing to debate except language.
Okay. Yes, exactly. So this is not about biology. Exactly. Your whatever that X that you're trying to show that exists, I will just give it to you. It exists. No. We gave it end of this. We don't need. Yeah, I will give it to you. It's fine. It exists. Okay.
So they are not substantial. Our differences.
So again, this is. Again, what I'm saying, yeah, our disagreements are how do we, what do we call that, okay? So this is not a discussion.
As long as
okay, I'm not going to call it. Okay, I think it's a mistake to call it God, okay? So again, this is not a scientific discussion. This is not a quantum discussion. This is not a biology discussion. This is just a disagreement on what we call things. And this is what people don't understand.
Perfectly agree.
We don't need to get into okay because it's so now let's just now that it's a discussion on what we call things, right? So this so your field is not relevant anymore, right? So your field is not relevant anymore. Neither biology or quantum physics is relevant here anymore. We already see okay, there's something that exists. Now we are like, should we call it God?
Okay.
I'm going to make an argument.
If you don't want to call it God, I don't really care. I'm a perennialist, and Buddhists never even use the word God, but they refer to the same idea. And this idea actually has now a good neurophysiological basis, but we'll come to that if you like. But I'll make it very, very clear. What do I mean by this X? You see, if I give you two statements, and this is a Gödelian statement, by the way, for the audience also, so they understand what do we mean by Gödelian statements. Very simplified, down from the actual way it's stated. If I say that statement one is true, and statement two is statement one can never be demonstrated or proven to be true. Now, a human can immediately see both these statements can be true at the same time. A machine cannot do it through an algorithmic process. This is what we mean by non-algorithmicity. And there is a lot of Gödelian theorem, a lot of Gödelian statements.
Doctor, you're really bad at explaining things. Has anybody ever told you that?
Lot of people have told me that. You see, one of my students actually has said that my arguments are not inconsistent, but they are so incomprehensible that it's hard to find out where they are. So I would give
whatever it is that you're trying to say, it's real. We've already moved past that. Okay, your X is real. Let's now move to the second part. At given that your X exists, okay, should we call it God? Okay, when Muslims pray five times a day. When Muslims say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, when Christians say Lord Jesus, okay, when Jews say Yahweh, when Hindus say Shiva, okay, are they referring to that thing? Are they referring to, because here's the thing with words, okay, doctor, you might not be you know, a quantum scientist, but let me tell you that you something about words, okay? For words, for the definition of words to make sense, they have to have utility, okay? If I call my cat a cup and my cup a cat, that could be a definition that works for me, but because other people don't use that word in that way, it's not going to be very effective. The utility of these words now don't make have reduced. Let me, I know, but let me tell my, let me make that my point, okay? Let me make my, because the whole point of words is to communicate. So if we don't use the words in the way that other people are using those words, the utility of being able to communicate with those words gets reduced significantly. So you have this thing that is X, and you're trying to make a whole argument about this X existing. I'm telling you, okay, fine, doctor, your X exists. You want to call it conscious or whatever, okay? But I tell you that it makes no sense for you to call it God, because that's not how what people are referring to. Most, the vast majority of the people in the world do not mean that when they say God. So you're just confusing people by calling it God. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. So you named a lot of religious traditions. And if you want to really break it down, so Allah in Islam is equivalent to God the Father in Christianity. Quran is actually equivalent to Jesus. Is equivalent to Shiva in Parashiva in Shivism, and Brahman in Hinduism, and Tayan in Confucianism, and Shinde also in Chinese religions. But the question is, in all, I agree that, you see, I agree with you in one thing, that a lot of description of God many a times is anthropomorphic and anthropocentric. I agree. But look at this. If you go to the climate, so if you want to, for example, understand science, you have to go to a scientist and, you know, somebody working in this is that field. If you want to understand science, language,
yeah.
Armin, let me make my point, please. So if you want to go to language, meaning of words, we can discuss linguistically, and I'm pretty flexible with words. But really, if you look at Wahdatul Wajud of Ibn Arabi, works of Adi Shankaracharya, works of Abhinav Gupta Verma, works of any of the, you know, climax of these religious thoughts, it reduces to acosmism. And acosmism is the philosophy.
You're talking about Sufis. So here's the thing. Wahdatul Wujud people are monists, right? And monists, we have spiritual monists and we have material monists. Wahdatul Wujud people are spiritual monists. Materialists are material monists, right?
Wahdatul Wujud is acosmism. So the reason I just described to you is acosmism.
Yeah, I know, but Wahdatul Wujud people are basically... they see everything as being God. Everything is God. So usually most theist people divide the world into the creator and the createe, right? The khaliq and the khalq. But the Wahdatul Wujud people see that God in everything. They even see God in themselves, right? They see...
What you just described is pantheism. It's acosmism. Sorry, you're wrong. I follow Wahdatul Wajud as I follow Advait Vedanta, as I follow all these traditions. But
okay,
I'm sorry, Armin.
You're not the authority.
This is a common misunderstanding.
I am not finished. Okay, you are not the authority on Wahdatul Wajud.
Please go on. You can.
You're not the authority on Wahdatul Wujud. I have talked to many people.
I have published on it. Okay.
Yeah, you're not. You know how easy it is to get articles published. I have published articles.
I'll just publish it in a peer review journal.
Oh my God! Can you let me speak?
Yeah, please go on.
This is okay, doctor. You need to be more civilized. Okay, so here's the thing.
Sorry, you can stop me at any time. Yes, please go on.
I am trying. God damn it! Okay, you're not that. I've seen so many people throw around, I've published an article on something, as if that makes them the authority. Okay, this is they think that's a conversation stopper, right? There are many, many, many people who believe in this nonsense, which is Wahdatul Wujud, which is a bunch of bullcrap, and they think that, and they disagree with you, right? The Wahdatul Wujud claim is nothing. It's very close to pantheism. It's basically the spiritual side of pantheism. Yes, I've talked. If you disagree with that, that doesn't make you right. I have spoken to many other people who are Wahdat al-Wujud, they believe in Wahdat al-Wujud, and they disagree with you, all right? And I've been doing this for enough years to know that people saying like, oh, I read a book on this, or I published an article on this, to try to think like, okay, then you are not allowed to have an opinion, or you're not allowed to disagree with me because I published it. And they think like, no, you say like, oh, you're wrong. And your reason was like, oh, I published an article on this, right?
No,
I will get you a lot of other people. I will get you a whole bunch of other people that have published, that have written books on this, that will tell you exactly that. They said that God, everything is God, right? And again, we have this monist attitude towards the universe, not just in Wahdat al-Wujud people with the Islamic tradition. We see this in Jews, yeah, have that, strong traditions of that. Hindus have that, right? And it's just... Yes, and basically it's so close to, I don't know, Spinoza's
exactly
the universe, right?
Yes, right. But, I completely agree. But
yeah, it's close, but they come together from they sound like each other because they look into nature and they want to call everything in nature God. Okay, they want to attribute everything into nature to God, and the Spinoza side of it comes from a more materialistic perspective, and the monist and the Wahdat al-Wujud people come from a more spiritual perspective. Again, these are just playing with words, right? These are just playing with words. These are just people. These are armchair philosophers, right? Rather than trying to, through empirical evidence, understanding how the universe works, they have already, people who have already observed the universe and have came up with some understanding of what it is, they just want to attribute human characteristics to it, and they have, you know, based on their feelings and based on, you know, humans, there are two things that humans really enjoy, right? They try to simplify everything into being one thing. You know, you can see this in conspiracy theories. You can see this in the obsession with making everything just one thing. You could see this from an atheistic perspective, people who want to call everything in the universe God. It makes them feel good for some reason for everything to just be one thing. You can see that from the spiritual side as well. The Jews do that. Hindus do that. You see Wahdat al-Wujud people too, from the Islamic perspective, do that. That does not really help us have a better understanding of the universe. These are just playing with words, right? That's one desire that we have, to just make everything just one. We are somehow our mind is obsessed with the number one. You know, the whole Wahdat al-Wujud obsession is basically the same as the people in the comment section that write first. You know, say like first comment, people are like, oh, I was the first person to comment. That's basically the whole obsession with number one is basically the reason why people are Wahdat al-Wujud, or why people are trying to become pantheists and stuff like that, right? And then that's one obsession. And another obsession that we have is to go look in nature and find something that is very human. So find something that is very human. These two obsessions makes us try to come up with linguistics, gymnastics to come up with, for us to be able to describe the universe in a way that everything is one, God is everything, and bullcrap like that. I mean, it's poetic, it's beautiful.
Can I make a point?
If it helps you,
the monologue for 5 minutes. Can I make a small point, please? See, first of all, first of all, I was not trying to shut you down. I think you made some really nice points, and apart from linguistics, I might have learned something here. We might even agree on certain things. All I was trying to say is, when you were trying to tell me that I don't understand Wahdat al-Wujud, I do understand Wahdat al-Wujud.
I didn't say.
But Armin, please, I say you're completely quiet when you were making an argument.
But you're saying something that I didn't say. I say you're not the authority on it. You said that
okay,
I don't.
I might not. Okay, I can give you that. I never claim to be an authority in anything. but at least, you see, the idea is that I understand something doesn't mean make me an authority. But at least I know one thing, that Spinoza's approach is not pantheism, and that sometimes misunderstood. The word acosmism was actually introduced to explain his view, and this is, I won't blame you. A lot of people misunderstand Wahdat al-Wujud or Advait Vedanta to be pantheistic. It's not. Again, it doesn't prove those views to be correct. It just is factually stating what those views are. Those views are acosmism. And what is the difference? In those views, universe is not even real. Universe is Maya. Universe is an illusion created by consciousness, which is ultimately real. Again, the problem here is this, that these words, the words like consciousness, if you want to use consciousness, or if you want to use words of that sort, I think here we kind of hit a roadblock. Because see, this is the problem. These words have been very well studied in modern, there are studies of words. People. Can I come to this point? And these words have taken a certain meaning. So my whole argument here was, if you want to summarize my argument, and again for audiences and for you, I would really request you to go through the literature. I said Penrose Lucas theory, Gödel's theorems. Go through this and it from bit from it. Definitely read that, and then go in and. Because it's very hard to do it quite fast. And go in and maybe see what acosmism is and what Advait Vedanta is, what Wahdatul Wujud is, what Taoism is, and what Confucianism is. And see if you the kind of hyperstructure you come out in these two coincide. If they coincide and if you feel they coincide, good enough. That was my point, and it's a very difficult point to make. And if you feel that I have made a logical flaw in my argument is also there. I just gave a talk.
You haven't made any arguments.
Well, okay. The problem is, Armin, I told you that I wanted to give a presentation and give a full argument, and you were like, let's have a talk about it. I'll give your audience a resource. So there are two resources I would recommend. In Atheist Canada, actually, my article was published on the nature of consciousness. So that is where you can find it. And I just had a online talk in Parvez Khudbai's Black Hole, but it's not on black holes. It is about this ultimate reality. So anybody in the audience wants to know my viewpoint, which I know, and this was my fear when I told you, Armin, that let me at least give 5-10 minutes of presentation, because I do realize, and I would like to apologize to your audience also, and to you also, Armin, for wasting the time, because the argument is really sophisticated. And it can't be understood in this way. So I would request you guys to go and check in that. And please let me know if you find a flaw. If you find a flaw, I would be happy. I would be the first person to admit that there is a flaw.
Okay, so here's the thing. Religious people who have a, you know, in the scientific field, who want to act like their God is complicated, let me make my point. Okay. Using there are some very, very simple points that they try to make, and actually when you wash away all the scientific language away for it and you come down to actually what they're saying, you will see that what they're saying is not that very complicated. It's something very simple. And that's what I try to do, because you are trying to make it seem more complicated than it actually is. Basically, what comes down to is that there's something that we understand about the nature of, the laws of the universe. And you are trying to say there's a God by saying that the nature of consciousness, our understanding of consciousness is very, consciousness, the way that consciousness works is very complicated, right? We don't understand it completely. So I'm not saying what you said. I'm talking.
Okay, you're just. I'm talking. I didn't, what you think. Okay, fair enough. Please go.
Yeah. No. Can you please stop for a second, doctor? All right. So here's the thing. Oh my! I didn't come interrupt you for a long time, and now you.
I'm sorry. You please, go say, okay. Please go on.
All right. So what we have, the basic laws of the universe. The nature of them and where they come from and how they came about, we don't really understand them. I know that we don't, there's disagreement of that in the scientific community. When it comes to the process of what how consciousness comes about, I know there's disagreement on that, but we know that they're both, all of these are very complex, right? And it's, I think, a very dishonest to try to use the fact that these are very complicated concepts as a way to try to somehow connect these two with each other, right? Because how consciousness works is very complicated, and a lot of people don't understand it, including most scientists don't even understand exactly how consciousness works. We are able to, using the complexity of that and using the complexity of not understanding where the basic laws of the universe come from, to somehow build a bridge between these two and try to connect them using a clever way of changing the definitions or playing around with words to somehow connect these two with each other. That's basically what is happening. All right. we don't need to get into that. We don't really need to get into all the theories of consciousness. We don't need to get into the, all the theories of where the basic laws of the universe comes from. We know that consciousness is something that exists, that we are referring to, which is a human experience. We also know that the basic laws of the universe exist. If you want to come up with certain definitions that connects these two with each other, go at it, right? At the end of the day, all of what you're doing is going to get to saying certain something exists, and I'm going to use a certain definition of consciousness for me to be able to say that this is conscious. Okay, great. Good job. Have at it. What does this got to do with anything?
And if you don't want to call it God,
and you don't want to call it. So that then the conversation is over. If I don't want to call it God, the whole point of the debate or conversation is whether God exists or not. And my understanding of God is what people, religious people, mean when they say God, and that thing does not exist. You have throughout this conversation, and even if we sit through your presentation for 5 hours, I'm glad that we didn't sit through your presentation, because I wanted to see that we're going to get to this. If we're not going to call it God, we would have wasted our time listening to a lecture to get to a point to that something exists that is not even God. What would be the point of that? We're here to see if God exists or not. And you're calling, so what would be the point of this conversation? So here's that. So thank you. So we agree. We have not provided any arguments or any evidence. So we have not provided a single argument or a single evidence for the existence of God. And I'm glad that we didn't go through that presentation. When it comes to Spinoza and Wahdat al-Wujud, I don't know, doctor. I think you're being dishonest here, okay? The fact that you said...
No, I'm sorry. Please tell me. No, that's a very serious claim. You got to tell me how.
All right.
You'll have to take it back, because I just said Spinoza, aquasmism was used to classify Spinoza's view. I'm pretty sure about Spinoza. I'm sorry, you are not. You can say that I misunderstood it. Please take the view of dishonesty back, because this is quite offensive. I've never been dishonest in my life, and I've even written papers against my own self.
Okay, I will take that. I would say unfair. How about it? Would you be upset? Like, I didn't know you did this.
Yeah, misunderstandingly unfair is okay, because I am somebody who is completely admitted.
Can I make my point? Okay. Can I make my point?
Make it unfair is
okay. Because, for example, you said Spinoza is not pantheism, or is not this, or is not that, okay? But if I'm sure you have gone into the details of Wahdat al-Wujud and Spinoza way more than I have. I'm pretty sure, okay? But if anybody looks into, just like, you don't need to go become an expert into Spinoza or Wahdat al-Wujud, okay? But if anybody spends half a minute studying Spinoza's or Wahdat al-Wujud, the first thing you will realize is that people who study these don't agree with each other, right? So for you to come and say that this is, for you to come and say that Spinoza is not pantheism, where so many people say it's pantheism, so many people say he's an atheist. Calm down.
The when word aquasmism so was used to classify his views. You see, this is okay. Armin, I will make it simple, and I don't want to make it rude. But have you seen that argument when somebody holds a banana and peels it and says evolution is not true because
I haven't even made my point?
It's like that kind of an argument. Please, Armin, make
this
a
is
more point.
This is your opinion of Spinoza and Wahdat al-Wujud. This is not the reality. If anybody understands any of these concepts, they know that this is a whole area of armchair philosophy, and people are just discussing their disagreements over basically how many angels
can fit on a point. Last point, you've been having a monologue for 10 minutes. Let me have it for the last 1 minute, and then you can finish it up.
Go ahead.
My problem is my problem is the following, and this has been there. I know I might not have explained it fully. I've referred to audiences where the argument is made more consistently. You see, things are studied by experts. And this is a problem sometimes with creationists. They don't have any understanding of evolution and come up and say, well, because I don't understand it, and monkeys can, we can open bananas, and so banana has a handle, so evolution is wrong. You cannot approach any field. It need not be even the question of existence of God, existence of consciousness, even the linguistic, the idea of language. Mathematical linguistics and linguistics is a well-studied branch. How do words take meaning? You can't approach any of these ideas naively. Now, I am not making a claim here by saying that, oh, atheism might not be a good enough approximation to reality. My claim is that theism is a better approximation to reality. But we could have had a full debate on what is the best word to use. Because if we agree on the content and we disagree on the word, then we can have a separate discussion someday that whatever I have called X, the best linguistic approximation for that X is God, but that's a separate discussion, and that's a separate, thing to go about.
Okay, your 1 minute is over.
Just getting short of time, I will let you have the last word. And in any
all
case,
right, so the reason,
the fact that we have agreed, the on reason X, why, we have agreed on a lot of things. Please go on.
Right. The reason, sorry if I called you dishonest, but the reason why I was thinking that, but I said maybe you're being dishonest. I didn't say you're dishonest, right? But the reason why I said that is because the experts, the so-called experts in studying Wahdat al-Wujud or Spinoza or anything, they don't agree with each other, okay? They're constantly fighting over each other, over this, every single word of people, of Spinoza, or people that are, within that Wahdat al-Wujud philosophers, that have every single, the people who consider themselves experts don't agree on this. So people don't even agree whether or not that they could call Spinoza an atheist or not. They can't agree. You say Spinoza was not pantheist. Many people, the first thing that comes to their mind when you say pantheism, Spinoza comes to their mind. Again, don't act because your view is the correct view. This is armchair philosophy. This is not like objective science, that we have the truth and not truth. This is people disagreeing over each other over the meaning of words.
We were discussing
yes,
language.
Yes, so this is language. Exactly, because it's a language discussion.
I was initially discussing objective science.
Don't tell me.
Don't.
But I'm using the fact that you came here. I'm using the fact that you, because I know how much people disagree on Spinoza. I know how much people fight over this. And people who have studied Spinoza all their lives. Let me make my point. I know enough to know how people who have studied Spinoza all their lives completely disagree on many things about Spinoza with other people who have studied Spinoza all their life. And I just want to use that as an example, that when you come and say so confidently, because you've published an article or something on Spinoza or what, or Wahdat al-Wujud, no, that's completely wrong. You're being naive. Spinoza is not pantheism. These are not correct. And I know that many people who study Spinoza do call him a pantheist. I just want the audience to realize that you use the fact that you're a scientist and you have published articles to speak so confidently about other things within science, and act like there is a unanimous agreement on these things within the scientific community. And because other people who are listening to you,
except for
people, but I know you have it. But you act like it. You're like, oh no, you're wrong. I know there are close to universal agreements, but I'm just saying that because the audience itself has not been studying these things, and you have been involved within the literature around these things, you use that to your advantage to come so confidently say something that there are so many disagreements between scientists about it. I just want the audience to be warned.
Tell me
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just warning the audience to just be careful when somebody who has published articles, who has a doctor in their name, okay, who is a scientist, comes and says something so confidently. Don't think that there's agreement within the scientific community or within the philosophical community about that. Because I just know from all the things you said, I know specifically what you said about Spinoza is wrong. So I just wanted to make sure that all the other things that you claim.
Just one second. I need to make this point. For the audience, look acosmism and look why acosmism term was invented. It was invented to explain Spinoza's belief. So Armin thinks by, it's wrong. I'm yes. not an expert, but please do look at this term.
No, you don't understand what I'm saying. When you say this is the truth about Spinoza, okay, that level of confidence, that is the part that is wrong. Because there's no agreement, especially on Spinoza, there's not this level of agreement. So when you come and say Spinoza is not pantheism, that is, and say it so confidently and call other people who disagree with that naive, is ignoring the fact that so many experts, so many people who study him, will refer to him as pantheist. So I just want the audience to know that don't let your ignorance be used against you for somebody to tell you that you're wrong so confidently, okay? Just letting you know.
They can just go, warning you know, audience. Even read a simple article on Spinoza and see this. But I agree with you in...
Are not agreement. You have to acknowledge that there's not...
I think let's leave Spinoza.
Let me say this. Just because there's an article on something, doesn't mean that it's right. There are articles against it by experts as well. But go on.
Not. I don't know about articles against acosmism, but if there is, I would love to know it.
I'm talking about the part that you said Spinoza is not a pantheist.
No, that is the idea that Spinoza is not an acosmist. If there's an article, it could be my lack of information. Please do send me.
Do you agree, doctor? Do you agree that there are many people who would say Spinoza is a pantheist?
Many non-experts naively would think about Wahdatul Wujud, Spinoza, and with Vedanta as pantheism, but it's not.
You're cutting in and out, which is fine because we're already out of time. Doctor? Doctor has lost. I didn't do anything, guys. My hands are up here. Okay, so we lost the doctor. But that's fine because we were going to end this conversation anyways. If I see the doctor coming. Anyways, guys, I don't know if you like these types of discussion. Make sure you leave a comment and let me know. I would rather do more debates on Islam and, you know, Israel, Palestine, or things around the Middle East. But if you guys are more interested in seeing God debates, let me know. If you want to debate me, reach out to me on my Twitter account. You can see my name here. If you search for Armin Navabi on Twitter, you know, you will be able to contact me there and set up a debate. And I don't think the doctor made any... The whole point of this discussion was proving God. I think he agreed to me at the end that whatever he's trying to prove that exists does not need to be called God. So I think
let's end on some nice note where I can at least
say something before.
Yeah, please go.
Okay, before I just want to say people can contact me for debates. Search for me on Twitter. My DMs are open if anybody else wants to debate me. But doctor, before we say nice things to each other, I think I won because you kind of accepted that we don't.
I mean, it was never a question of winning and losing. It's always a question of presenting the argument and. but
I'm kidding.
It's always a question of presenting the argument.
Oh my God.
I
said joke.
I wasn't able to present my argument clearly, but I would really like, because you're a really clever guy, Armin. You can see my proper argument in Parvez Hutbay's black hole lecture. And if you do find a fault in it, or if you do find somebody, let me complete the point. If you do find a person who has actually rigorously argued that Spinoza is pantheistic, not acosmist, after knowing that view, please do forward me the paper so I can also enhance my knowledge on it. I do not know of any such view, but I'm open to it. It's possible that I might have missed some literature that you are aware of. Again, I'm sorry to the audience. I know the way that this presentation went, it was even confusing to me and definitely confusing to Armin. But really, Armin, you're a really clever guy. And one thing I really appreciate about you, now the time to appreciate Armin, is your sincerity. I do know that you're very sincere. I've heard your life story and I completely know about your sincerity. And you're very sharp. You could see that maybe what we're disagreeing on is linguistics. So I would date it. I would love it from you. I would love to go, like, if you go ahead and view my argument and see if you can really find a real flaw. Note for the audience, young members of the audience, is that, you know, we can have any view. We can have theism, atheism, whatever you want to linguistically call your views. But your view should be based on, if it is a view based on XYZ fact, then that XYZ fact, and that XYZ fact has been rigorously studied, then you should at least be familiar with the literature. It's a mistake theists make when they come up and say, there is no evolution. Why? Because I can open a banana. That's not how evolution works. If you are not familiar with abiogenesis, if you're not familiar with the hard sciences of evolutionary biology, you don't need to be, but then don't waste your arguments on it. So work has been done. People can, you know, to base your argument on any XYZ field. You really need to know that XYZ field to know that. And I'm confident, one thing I like about Armin is both his sincerity and his sharpness. I'm sure we'll have a more meaningful debate. A last thing about Armin, I think where we would agree, one thing again I'm very happy that you do, is, you know, we might disagree on metaphysics, but I think we'll have a lot of agreement when it comes to human rights advocacy. I do support a lot of core issues of human rights, and we can even maybe have some meaningful debate there where we will have more agreement than disagreement. Feminism, I definitely call myself feminist. And I think we should definitely have more of this conversation in future where we can possibly even discuss ideas where we disagree. I do realize that this conversation went a little I was talking technically, and sometimes I try to simplify. It's still complicated. I'll try to do a better job next time. But we can have a lot more agreement. So this is my compliments to Armin. If anything Armin wants to compliment. So we end on a good note.
I think you're a nice guy. And you're very polite and friendly. Friendlier than I am. Okay. And I think, what else? I think you would be a fun guy to hang around with and go, grab it.
We should hang out if I come to Canada, next. I am usually in Kelowna and Vancouver. Sorry, Kelowna and Vernon, but I will come to Vancouver someday to hang out with you. I'm right now in Europe, and when I come to Canada, we should definitely hang out. Go to Tim Hortons together. Take care.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Doctor. That was fun. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Pleasure.
You take care as well. All right.
See you. Bye-bye.
Okay. See you. Bye. Let me just... Okay. All right. So I'm just going to quickly read the super chats. Gaijin American saying, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name of that can be named is not the eternal name. Tao Te Ching. I don't know what you're saying, Gaijin American, but thank you for the super chat. Also, Gaijin American saying, Dr. Frazier, have you seen... Oh, I didn't read this while he was here. Sorry. Have you seen the study of 100,000 human neurons playing Pong? What's the density of neurons needed to create sapiens? And can non-human neurons create sapiens? Can this be... simulated, I think you mean, with fungi. All right. I'm glad that... Thank you so much, Gaijin American. Sorry I didn't ask him that question, but I don't think we would get any answers that it would be relevant to the discussion, right? At the end of the day, this conversation was supposed to be about proving God, but it ended up being about proving something else that is not God. So I don't know what was the point of trying to have this conversation. I don't think... And you know, even if we allowed for him to provide a presentation of the whole thing, at the end of the day, I'm glad that we didn't do that, because I just wanted to see what we're getting at at the very end, because sometimes, you know, especially theists within a scientific background, they hold your hand and they want to take you on a journey, a very, very long journey, that they promise you at the end of it, you will see God. And I'm like, okay. Before we take this trip, can you tell me, show me what the destination? I'm like, no, just hold my hand. We'll get there. I'm like, no, because this could take a long time. Can you tell me where you're taking me? And then we take a peek at where you're supposed to go. And like, well, I'm glad that we didn't spend a lot of time trying to go there, because I will just give that to you. Okay, you can have it. You want to say that exists? Sure. Like, let's just assume it does. But what does it got to do with God? I mean, that you should be careful, because if you could spend 2 hours or half an hour or 5 hours just listening to them, and at the end of the day, we will agree that, oh yeah, this thing that you say exists does exist. And what does this got to do with the topic of the debate? Exactly, right. That's all it comes down to. All right, guys. Thank you for being here. Again, leave a comment. Tell me if you want me to just focus more on Islam and the Middle East politics, or would you like to sometimes do other topics like this as well? If I see that there's not much demand for God discussions here on Atheist Republic, I will stop doing it. I will check the views. I will check how many people liked it. So if you like this, like it. I will see how many people left a comment saying, like, yes, do this, or how many people leave a comment saying, like, nope, stop that. Don't do this again. This is not what I come to Atheist Republic for. And based on that, I will decide whether or not, you know, sometimes we'll do this or not, right? Some people in the live chat are saying, I like the mix. Okay, thank you. Yeah. All right, guys, this is the Atheist Republic. When I say republic, we mean republic. You guys decide exactly where the direction of this channels and all our other activities are going, okay? All right, guys. See you on the next stream. Bye. Mwah.